Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here on this getaway Friday, Halloween Eve, October the 30th, 2020, 13 coming up on 14 minutes past the hour. And we thank legendary newsman Sam Donaldson for being on with us in the last hour. Sam is always a great guest, and you now have your election fix, as they would say. And remember, Sam has agreed to come back with us when we know who the next president is going to be. So stay tuned for that on this station. When we know, Sam will be back. So Sam Donaldson, we thank him so much for being on this morning. Now, we turn to another guest this morning who has been on this program before, a person I enjoy a whole lot. And now that we have got our political fix this morning, we can now go in and have some fun with Halloween tomorrow and so on and so forth. This gentleman is a tremendous actor. You might have seen him on the legendary Gong Show or from his appearance on The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson, movies, television, and maybe particularly in this area because of the proliferation of cable television. He was Bozo the Clown on WGN's Bozo Show from the mid-1980s right on up through, I believe, 2001. What a pleasure it is to share the microphones here and have some fun with Joey DiOria. Joey, how are you?
Fine, Scott. How are you?
Good. Good to speak with you. How is life in general?
Well, it's very quiet. My wife and I think are getting along very well with this whole pandemic thing. I guess a lot of people are staying at home, so. Yes, we get to see a lot of each other, and she isn't sick of me yet, so I guess we're doing okay.
You know, Joey, it's interesting because the pandemic. We're in month number 8, I guess, of this now. We're heading into month number 8. What have you made of the whole thing?
Oh, well, my gosh. It's just unbelievable. I was looking at some old photographs from the pandemic of 1918. And I don't think that went on anywhere near as long as this. It's just very strange. There just hasn't been a unified way of handling it. I think each state handles it a little bit differently. I don't know if your listeners know about how things are here in California, but they've gotten almost draconian.
Well, what is the mood in California right now?
Cranky. People are cranky. I have a number of friends who work at Disneyland, and they have all now finally have been pretty much fired because they held on to them as employees for as long as they could. But a lot of people have lost jobs in some of the major entertainment industries, Disneyland, Universal Studios. I was originally scheduled to be in a play last March, and then when the pandemic hit, we were all informed that we'll probably, they said you're all still cast, but we'll do it when the theaters reopen in January, and now even January reopening is looking doubtful. So it's pretty scary.
You know, we talk about people who work in factories, and we talk about people who work in restaurants and department stores, as well we should, but actors have really taken a hit during this time when you can't go to the theater, when you have to be 6 feet apart, when you have to wear a mask. What has this done to the entertainment industry?
Well, it has pretty much closed down a lot of television and film production, as you know. Fortunately, a lot of my work lately has been in voiceover. I do cartoon voices right now. And I had to build a little booth, and I had to buy a top-quality microphone, so I've had a couple of other big expenses, just so that I can continue working in animation. Instead of going to Warner Brothers or a recording studio, I have to do a patch-in with an engineer somewhere else, and I record from home.
Do you think we will get back to normal at some point? Do you think it will be getting up and going and getting our coffee and going to the studio? Or do you think people, when this is passed to a certain degree, will say, well, you know, we've learned we can do it a different way now?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, frankly, this stinks. I get up in the morning and I do the grocery shopping. My wife and I are very lucky. I have a couple of pensions from some of my jobs, so we have not been hit as hard as a lot of other people have. But and my son, for example, works for Google, and he is working from home. So he's a software engineer, and he does Zoom meetings with the members of his team and things like that. So, I mean, yeah, my son, as a father with two small children, is finding this to be okay, mostly because he helps his wife with the homeschooling. Now, for retired people or semi-retired people like my wife and myself, it's boredom, you know? We can't go out to our favorite restaurants. You can't visit friends. It has been a little bit crazy. I don't know if people would want to continue with things the way they are now.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because when this whole thing got rolling, people learned that they could do their jobs at home, and I guess businesses learned this as well out of necessity. But for years, we've been having this conversation, and I think it started with cell phones and texting to a certain degree. We're not going and visiting people as much. We're not talking on the phone. We're not using the human voice anymore. This has seemed to exacerbate that. Where do we go with human communication if we don't flip back?
Well, I don't know. But, I mean, but this has got to stop. I mean, sooner or later, they're going to either come up with a vaccine or things will get better. I think that people will probably be a little more germ conscious, especially now that we're coming into flu season. The washing the hands, the keeping 6 feet apart, the business of wearing a mask, which has been proven to be very useful, could bring things down. I mean, I think there have been some considerable spikes in numerous states where people have not been wearing the mask. How are things there in Ohio? Aren't you experiencing a spike in COVID cases?
Well, we are. You know, it's interesting because yesterday our governor, who has been praised a lot during this pandemic nationwide, came on television. He's doing two-time-a-week press conferences now, and he came on yesterday, and he used the word raging, that it's raging in Ohio, and for the first time, I think we topped 3,000 cases a day, but then said he wasn't going to put any restrictions in place right now.
Hmm. Well, it's interesting. For instance, in California, they open the restaurants and then they close them, you know? I think they've opened up hair salons and nail salons because I guess they can take a certain amount of precaution with those, but gee whiz. I'm sure that, you know, sooner or later, things have got to get better, and I do hope they come up with a vaccine or some way to deal with this. But until then, this is getting pretty unbearable for a lot of people.
You know,
who can't work remotely.
Yeah. Well, you know, the human condition is interesting because I think one of the stories that will come of this when we do get through it is that people did have to be restricted. It wasn't enough to tell people that this is bad, that, you know, it's viral, that this could kill you, but government had to step in and tell people not to open up, not to go there, to wear a mask. What have you made of that?
Well, I guess it's a matter of if these people are getting this information from scientists and doctors, that we should hope that they know what they're doing. I mean, let's face it, as a species, we got through the bubonic plague, and we got through the Spanish flu of 1918. I think we'll get through this. But my goodness, this is certainly taking a lot longer than I think anyone thought it would be. I mean, back around March, I figured it would be, you know, it would be finished by around April or May.
Never has anything had the longevity of this, and as far as deaths go, wars and things that have happened on this continent are looking pretty pale in comparison at this point, and we're maybe not even halfway through it.
I mean, we're almost very close to 300,000 deaths in the United States alone.
Do you think at this point that, and I hate to say it like this, but do you think that means anything to people anymore? They've been inundated with numbers for 8 months. If it hasn't affected your family, do you think that just rolls over people's heads now? I think they call it fatigue.
Well, yeah, I think so. I think everybody's pretty fatigued. I mean, my son and daughter-in-law do not want their kids having to go into a school and try to wear masks. I mean, they're young children, and kids aren't going to deal with that all day long. So that's why my daughter-in-law and son have chosen to homeschool. But it's getting to a point now where people are basically just wanting to get together with their friends again. I have several friends who have all, you know, we've texted each other and said, when this is over, we've got to get together for dinner. So, I mean, I've got a lot of dinner invitations that I'd really like to cash in.
Yeah, and as we head into Halloween tomorrow, as we head into Thanksgiving, now less than a month away, as we head into Christmas, now less than 2 months away, what do you foresee the holiday season like this year?
Well, there'll be a lot of Zooming. However, in regard to Thanksgiving, there'll be a lot less political arguments. So.
Thank goodness for that.
Exactly.
At least we'll have that.
Yeah.
Joey, it's interesting. There is an article, and it was put out by the, I think it just came out yesterday, the American Psychological Association Stress and American Survey, and 70% of U.S. adults are stressed right now, anxiety, fear, dread. Now, this is a lot. This is not just the pandemic. This is the election. This is the unknown. But at this time in 2016, that number was only 52%. Why do you think it's up so high?
Well, I think it's up so high because they're also taking into advantage that this has been a lot harder on younger people than older people. I mean, my wife and I have, you know, have commented on a number of times that we're really very comfortable. You know, we're at home. We have each other. But there are a lot of young people who are single and who are going through this alone, and that's probably very stressful.
What's the good part for you? What have you learned during this time? What's the carrot of knowledge? The good part.
Well, I've been cooking at home. I've dusted off some cookbooks that my wife and I've had, and so you know, believe it or not, you can get a much better meal cooking it at home than you could at any restaurant. I mean, I made lamb chops the other day that were just spectacular.
It's great. And, you know, I want to say we've done the pandemic now, because I think one thing is, if we talk about this all the time, people go nuts. I don't think we can avoid it, but I think we have to talk about it. But, you have done so many amazing things, and there's so many fun stories. You've been on so many fun shows. People remember the Gong Show so well. What was your most memorable experience on the Gong Show?
On the Gong Show? Well, it was my first appearance on the Gong Show, which was with Dr. Flamo, which I had come up with solely as a joke. I thought it was just a stupid act. They blew me off the stage. And back then, Barris was so desperate to get people on the show because, you know, they needed acts. The show was on, I think, 3 days a week back in its heyday. As I'm sitting backstage, I was sitting next to a girl who was a very unfortunate-looking young woman. She was not pretty, and she was getting ready to go next, and she looked at me and she said, "I'm not an attractive person." And I went, "Oh no, you're fine." She says, "No, don't try to sugarcoat it. I know I'm not attractive, but you know what?" She said, "Barbra Streisand isn't attractive, and she's a great singer." And I said, "Well, yes, that's true. She is a wonderful singer and a wonderful entertainer." And she says, "And I am going to be a wonderful singer." And they introduced this girl. She came on. And the big song back then was "You Light Up My Life." And this girl was not only homely, she was tone deaf. And it was just painful to listen to. And the audiences were geared up by the studio people to get them to scream out. I mean, people were just shouting the most horrible things. You never heard the audience on your television screen, but the people got really nasty. And I watched this poor girl leave the stage in tears, and I remember thinking, I did not come here thinking this was my big break in show business. I expected to be booed. So I went out and I did it. And the minute I put my hand over the first candle and screamed, I heard someone in the back of the auditorium yell, "He's hurting himself!" And from that moment on, they cheered. And I got through the whole thing. They never gonged me. So when they each gave me 10 points, the panelists at the time were, I think, Fred Travellina, J.P. Morgan, and what was his name? He was a big fellow with a big mustache. They gave me the points, and I just stared at them, and I went, "You like that?" And Chuck Barris elbows me in the ribs and goes, "Shut up, kid! You're a hit."
Now tell people, if they haven't seen it, what Dr. Flamo was.
If people are familiar with, like, bell ringers or people who play glasses with varying amounts of water in them, Dr. Flamo had a table with 8 candles, little tiny ones, big fat ones, and I would hold my hand over a different size candle and scream in a different pitch depending on the size candle. And I sang "Smoke Gets in Your Eyes." You can find it on YouTube.
You know, now we look at television, we look at late-night television, and it's become so political in a way. The days of Johnny Carson, when he came out and he did a monologue and he was there for 30 years and he was the king of late night, you got to appear on that show. What were the circumstances under which you got to appear on the Johnny Carson show?
I used to work for Milt Larson, the man who founded the Magic Castle in Hollywood. And Milt was a very good friend with a fellow by the name of Jim McCulley, who was Johnny Carson's casting director. And it was Johnny's, I believe it was New Year's Eve show. And Milt had a couple of magicians that McCulley wanted to see. One magician did a very classy act, and another magician did a comedy act that was very messy. And they were going to put the comedy guy on first. And Milt said to me, "We need about 5 minutes to clean the stage. Could you go in front and do Dr. Flamo?" So I said, "Sure." I got my candles out of the closet. And after the magician finished his act and they shut the curtain, I came out with the candles and I did the act. Now, Jim McCulley had a reputation in Hollywood that he would go to all the comedy clubs, and he had a reputation of never laughing. He would study what the comedians were doing, but he would not laugh. He would just study you. But luckily for me, he had two guests with him that night. He had Tim Conway and Harvey Korman. And the minute I did Dr. Flammo, Tim Conway literally fell off his chair and fell under the table laughing. And I then finished my act. I walked across the stage. McCulley watched the second magician. And as I was walking through the bar area, Milt grabbed me and said, "Jim McCulley wants to put you on The Tonight Show. He loved the act." So that was how I got The Tonight Show.
Now, The Tonight Show in those days, for people who don't remember, it's watched by a huge amount of people. There are three channels at this point. I don't even think CBS had a late night show. Nightline had just started over at ABC. How intimidating was it to go out on the stage in front of Carson, who was over there?
Well, it wasn't so much a matter of being intimidated. I knew the act inside out. I wasn't doing something new. I just did it. And I have to say, I was especially gratified by his reaction, which, by the way, you can also see on YouTube.
It lives on forever.
Yes, indeed.
When you did that, now that was a tie-in to how you got the WGN Bozo job, was it not?
Yes, it was. When they were holding the audition, they were holding auditions here in Los Angeles. They held huge auditions in Chicago, and they even went out to L.A. And I did not go to the auditions in L.A. because I had no real clowning experience. I knew a lot of people who were ex-Ringling Brother clowns. I knew guys that were jugglers and mimes and Venice Beach street entertainers. I figured, well, they'll find what they want. Why should I waste their time? Why should I waste my time going for something that I'm not right for? And it wasn't until about several months after that audition that my wife read an article in which Al Hall, the producer, said, "We've only been able to find clowns and jugglers. We need somebody who knows old vaudeville and burlesque comedy." And my wife said, "They did everything but put your name in this article." So I contacted Al Hall in Chicago, and he said, "Well, we have to make a decision pretty soon. If you've got something on tape, send it to us." And I sent him the tape from The Tonight Show. And from that, they hired me.
Now, WGN at that point, cable television, was pretty much in its infancy then. It's going everywhere. WGN is going everywhere. It's making Harry Carey a national star. The Bozo Show at WGN is national at that particular point when others are just local. What did being on WGN in the 80s and 90s mean?
Well, it meant that it was pretty much like being on a nationally televised show. And it was. I was amazed at the history of the show. I knew very little about it. Back when I was living in L.A., a friend of mine, I was working at Universal Studios. They had a show called Castle Dracula, and one of the fellows who made an appearance was a kid who would appear as the Incredible Hulk. The Incredible Hulk television show with Bill Bixby was big back then. And they were doing a promo for WGN because they were going to be running the Hulk television series on GN. And they wanted a guy to be walking around Daily Plaza as the Hulk. And so this guy came out with his makeup artist, did some stuff for WGN ads, and they had him do a guest appearance on the Bozo Show. And he brought back the tape, and I went, "Oh my gosh, there's still a Bozo Show on the air?" And that was my first introduction to watching Bob Bell and Roy Brown on the Bozo Show.
When you were there in the early days with Roy Brown and Marshall Brodeen, who was Wizzo, how did that show evolve? How did you do that show? I think it was 5 days a week at that point.
It was. Basically, the show was already evolved. You know, they had the whole setup. All they needed was somebody who could be a foil for Roy Brown. That was where I think I stood out in my audition, was that I knew what was needed to make the show work. Bob Bell was the straight man to Roy Brown's stooge. So, I mean, that the minute I saw what the dynamic was, it was pretty easy for me to just fall right into place.
It was such an entertaining show in those days when it was every day. What was the taping schedule like on that show?
Well, it was very interesting. We would record two shows a day, 5 days a week, for 6 months. And you know, by the time we got one show, you know, on the air, there were now at least three shows in the bank ready to go on. But we would crank out two shows a day. They would bring in two audiences. And we would come in, we would read through the scripts for both of the shows, we would do a walkthrough for the cameramen, we'd then go back into our dressing room, put on our makeup and costumes, we'd come back out, we'd do the show entirely different. Because sometimes something new would suddenly hit us and we were constantly changing the script.
Is there a moment or a show that sticks out in your mind that you say, boy, that was a great day?
Oh, it's hard to pick one because there were so many. There were days when you just wanted to just crawl under a rock and die. There were some shows that just didn't click. But there were so many shows where the stuff was just coming. And usually it was because of a mistake, actually. Roy Brown had to bring out a prize for the grand prize game, and it was a wallet with a coin pocket. It was a boy's wallet with a coin pocket and a magic action picture. And he came out and he said, "We have a wallet with a magic action picture and a potato holder." I don't know where that came from, but he said, "Potato holder." I wouldn't let it go. And I said, "A potato holder? Really?" I said, would it hold a little potato or like a big baked potato? And Roy was breaking up, and he just looked at me, and he threw the wallet on the table and said, "I'm finished." And he walked off. But every time he came in with another prize, I would ask if there was a potato holder involved. And the laugh just built. I think if you can get a situation or a running gag like that, it was golden.
You know, when it came to the Bozo Show, everybody waited for the grand prize game. They wanted to. Do you have any grand prize game memories?
Well, you know, the rule was that kids had to be at least 7 years old to play, and 6 or 7 to play. And parents would come in with 2 and 3 year olds, and they would demand a ticket to play the grand prize game. And these children were way too little. And, you know, other than create a scene, the ushers would give them the ticket, which was okay, but then occasionally we would get a 3 year old up to play the game. Now, sometimes the minute the child was cornered and had to come upstate, the child would cry, and then we'd have to, you know, we'd have to choose another person because the kid didn't want to play, which would drive me nuts because the parents would pretty much try to force the child to play, even though he or she didn't want to. But when we did get a gregarious 3 year old who wanted to come up and play the game, they had no concept of the rules and would literally walk from bucket to bucket. And it drove Fraser Thomas crazy. He was the announcer on the show. He played the ringmaster character after Ned left. And then he looked at me and he said, "Hold her!" And I went, "No, I am not going to forcibly hold a child down." I said, "The prices aren't coming out of my paycheck. I don't care if the kid wins or not. But the thing is, I am not going to forcibly restrain a child. If it means that much to you, Frazier, you come out and hold it." And he never did.
You know, it's interesting. We talk about the footage on YouTube that lives forever, and certainly in the 80s and 90s, there were two no bigger celebrities in Chicago or on WGN across the country than Bozo the Clown and Harry Carey. And in the last few months, the footage is on there now on YouTube. People can go look of Harry playing the grand prize game, and Bozo's there. What was this for, and what do you remember about that?
I believe that may have been for an advertisement for Cubs baseball, and it was fun. Every time you get to Harry Carey, it was like working with Rizzo. You never knew what was going to come out of his mouth.
And later on, after Harry passed away, you got to lead the Take Me Out to the Ball Game in the seventh inning stretch.
Yes, that was. That was also coincided with the end of the Bozo season. That was our last year. The show had just announced that the show was going off the air. And I must say, I was there with Andy Matran, who played Professor Andy, and we got a standing ovation.
What was it like when that show ended, after being there for more than a decade?
Well, it was bittersweet. I mean, I had done it for 17 years. It was kind of frustrating in a way. We had now made some real great changes in the writing of the show. We had a director who understood the show. We had stagehands and cameramen that were really enthusiastic and weren't tired. And I really felt that, if we had a couple more seasons, they would have been some really spectacular shows.
What would you say, we look back at the history of that, they show it at holiday time, there are always clips that are brought up, people like it on YouTube. What is the history, the purpose, the place of the WGN Bozo show?
Well, the thing is, I think Chicago, more than anywhere else in the country, Chicagoans take things that they deem as uniquely Chicago to heart. That's why you have such strong fan loyalty to the basketball, football, and baseball teams. Bozo was a staple, I think, in everyone's life, and I think it held up. So much so that they still have a fellow there at WGN who wears the costume and appears at parades as Bozo.
To you, when you're playing a clown, and a clown that people know very well because of books and records and things like that, is it a person? Is it a role? How do you? What was Bozo to you for 17 years?
Bozo was just a vaudeville comedian in clown makeup, and that was pretty much it. We would just be silly. And the reason why I think I clicked so well with Roy Brown was that I knew the answer to, I knew the setup to all the punchlines he'd like to give. We would do a baking bit in which we would have to take cakes out of the oven, which of course wasn't a real oven and they weren't real cakes. But when we would open, one day as I was opening the oven to take out a cake, I realized I'm not wearing oven mitts. So I picked up it, and I'm just going, ow, 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 and it comes up again, and I'm blowing on my hands, and I go, we got to get oven mitts. And that became a running gag. And one day, we came to the studio to discover mommies had sent us close to 100 oven mitts.
That's reach.
And so we used a different oven mitt every time we had a baking bit every day.
As an actor who does voiceovers for cartoons or characters or even Bozo, that people can clearly tell that's not your voice exactly, how do you find the character's voice?
Oh, well, in the case of animation, you generally get an artist's rendition, and, you know, you kind of look that over, and you come up with something. Currently, I am the voice of Butch the Alley Cat in Tom and Jerry, and basically, they wanted someone to do a voice match to the actor who did it back in the cartoon days of the 1940s when the Tom and Jerry cartoons were produced for MGM.
When a character is not defined like that, how do you come up with the voice?
Is he short? Is he tall? Is he heavy? Is he old? Is he young? You basically have a whole catalog of things that you run through. I did a voice for a Japanese cartoon called Yokai Watch, in which I was the voice of Whisper, the Yokai Butler. He was a ghost, and he was a butler character. And I based the character on an old radio show character from the Jack Benny show, Frank. Oh dear, I can't remember his name now. But basically, it was like, "Ooh, isn't this wonderful?" And it was just a very loud and gregarious character.
It's an interesting thing, because a voiceover actor is so different from an imitation, an impersonator, because who knows how the person sounds like?
Oh, true. But, you know, if you go back and you look at some of the early cartoons from the 50s and 60s, a lot of the voiceover actors were radio comedians. The actor who played Fred Flintstone was a radio comedian who worked in Disney cartoons, and he worked on radio shows like the Jack Benny Show. Betty Rubble was voiced by Bea Benaderra, who had a long career in radio. She was also the mother on Petticoat Junction. Many people might remember her from that.
And a lot of people have, I believe, Don Adams did Inspector Gadget.
He did Inspector Gadget and Tennessee Tuxedo.
Yeah. It's nice work, I guess, as time has gone on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it was always great work to be able to get to a recording studio. I did one show where basically they had a cast of about 7 or 8 of us, and they put us all in a room together, and that was wonderful fun because we were all comedians, and we would make each other laugh, and it was just great fun. But now it's all done individually, and it's all done from home. The good news is, you know, I can do a voiceover job in my pajamas.
That is nice, as the way it goes. When it comes to comedy, because of all the comedy you have done over the years, do you get considered for a lot of serious roles?
Not lately. I've done a couple of student films that were a more dramatic bent, but no. And basically, most of the theater work that I've done out here is musical theater. Well, I've played, you know, Mr. Smee and Peter Pan and Belle's father and Beauty and the Beast, things like that.
Mm. When it comes to a part now, are there certain things you won't do?
I won't do?
You won't do? You say, boy, I won't do. That's something I won't play.
You know, I guess it's because I've never auditioned for anything that I wouldn't do. No one has ever approached me, you know, to do Old Calcutta or something like that. But no.
Well, what are the things you like to do?
I like comedy. I just like comedy. I started my career doing a lot of Neil Simon comedies, and that was back when I was working at a dinner theater in Miamisburg, Ohio, called the Topaz Dinner Theater.
Mm. It's interesting because a lot of people who are very comedic actors also do drama very well.
True. It's just a matter of, I think it's a matter of if I was more widely known, if I was doing more more television and film work, possibly things might come up. But as it stands right now, my only work is in voiceover primarily, and just voiceover since the pandemic struck.
Now, Joey, I think because we are Halloween Eve here, you are going to give us a little holiday treat. We have about 7 minutes left here in the interview. Take as much time as you need, and we'll come back after your little surprise here.
Okay, well, two things, actually. One, I was born in Tarrytown, New York. And for people who know their history, Tarrytown was originally called Sleepy Hollow. And of the Headless Horseman fame. But when I was in my teens, I worked at a summer theater in a town called Moose Jaw, Maine. And there was talk that the theater was haunted. Apparently, this theater had been around since the turn of the 20th century, and supposedly there was an actor who murdered his wife in her dressing room and was chased by the police throughout the town, and he ran back to get his bags from the theater, and the police cornered him. He climbed up into the rafters of the theater over the catwalk above where all the curtains were, and supposedly they saw him, they shot him, he fell down and died stage center. And everyone always said that stage center on that stage in that theater was always ice cold, even in summer. And a bunch of us one night decided to have a sleepover in the theater, and we sat there. And you know, it's amazing how young people's imaginations get the better of them. And people could swear they saw somebody moving around in the rafters. And I was laughing it off. And as we were packing up our things to go, it was just midnight. As we turned our backs and were heading towards the door, we heard a loud thump, stage center. As if somebody had dropped from a great distance. No one was there. So that's my ghost story.
That is spooky. Spooky,
yeah.
To be. Well, you know, and do you believe in the paranormal?
Oh, I think that there are many things that we can't explain. I don't believe in any kind of malevolence. I believe that possibly there are people who are lost, and they tend to just keep repeating themselves. I don't know. It's hard to say. Go ahead.
Do you have a favorite memory of Halloween when you were a child?
Oh, my grandmother made me a Dracula cape, and she sewed me a cutaway tuxedo. I mean, my grandmother was a whiz with her little Singer sewing machine, and I was Dracula one year, and that was the best Halloween costume ever.
Halloween means so much to kids. It's going to be interesting this year to see how it all shakes out.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we just found out that, of course, there will be no trick-or-treating here in California. And my wife is furious with me because a couple of weeks ago, I bought a couple of bags of candy, and she's already gone through one of them.
What's your favorite candy?
Me? I like Three Musketeers. My wife likes Snickers.
Very popular.
Yeah, very popular.
Very popular. Do you have a favorite scary movie?
Well, believe it or not, my favorite scary movie is Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Good choice.
Yeah.
Good choice. You know, before we part ways, Joey, we have about 3 minutes here, and I think because we all need a laugh in these particular times, I think you were on a couple years ago, and you told a great story about when you were doing the Bozo Show. You used to have to do the spiel for the grand prize game every day, and that got a little tiresome after a while. And you did something on a particular. Do you know what story I'm talking about?
Yes, I think so. I was standing there, and the audience said, "You know, I said, are you all set for lots of fun and fabulous prizes?" And the audience yelled, "Yes!" And then I said, "Well, what about me? What about my needs?"
It's a great story. It's a,
one of those silly things that just come to you, that just flies into your head at a moment's notice.
You know, we have about 2 minutes left, and one of the most interesting things about you is you have had to teach people how to throw pies, because there's a wrong way to do this.
Yes, that's true.
What's the right way?
The right way is to, well, for instance, I prefer to use a paper plate as opposed to a tin foil plate or an actual metal pie plate. A paper plate is good because you won't hurt anyone. But you don't hold it in the flat of your hand. You hold it with your thumb and forefinger, and you slap at someone. You don't slap palm it, because that way you'll break somebody's nose.
Have you ever gotten a pie the wrong way?
No, because, well, one, Bozo never got pies. He was the thrower. He was never the throwee. But on the occasions that I did, the person who would hit me would probably be Roy Brown or Robin Urich or even Marshall Brodeen, and they knew the rules.
You know, we talked before, I think, when Marshall passed away, that I got to spend a little bit of time with him here when he came here. You know, working with him alone must have been very interesting, to say the least.
Oh, it was. He was full of all kinds of incredible stories. He was always full of fun. Every now and then, Roy Brown would sometimes say to me, "I want to be Marshall Brodeen when I grow up."
A good guy. Joey DeOria, it's so always a pleasure to have you on the program. Always a pleasure to talk with you, especially here as we go into the big Halloween weekend. Thank you so much for calling in today.
Okay, and to you and all of your viewers, please stay safe.
Stay well. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Joey DeOria, probably best known in this area for his portrayal of Bozo the Clown for 17 years on WGN through 2001. We'll be back in about 10 minutes.
If he's in there, what could there be a bad future?
I'm concerned about that. I have said that if he gets, it is a danger to the state. The